All right, welcome everyone back to our Three Ideas in 30 Minutes, a pre-hot dog edition. Our hot dogs are not ready yet, so I'll buy some time for you. I know that's the only reason you guys came. I'm not offended by that at all. Anyways, our shiur this week is sponsored by Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak and gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS. We continue to be extremely grateful to the Fedaks for their sponsorship and for their generosity. Okay, here we go. Wow, you guys have never been so attentive. Usually you guys are, oh, Jason still got his food, but everyone else is paying attention.
I'm glad I was singled out.
Okay, we know your wife likes that. Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
Idea number one comes from Menachem Mendel Zaks. This is a beautiful idea I saw this week. They just put out a new version of his Sefer, which is much more user-friendly. And this idea caught my attention because I think it's a very beautiful idea. Of course, at the beginning of the Parsha, we're introduced to the menorah. Aaron, of course, for whatever the Rashi tells us, we're introduced to the menorah. And the pasuk says, "V'zah ma'ase menorah, miksha zav ad yirechad pircha miksha hi, kamarei asherei Hashem es Moshe kenasa es ha-menorah." So it starts off with very grand, almost expectations. "V'zah ma'ase menorah." I'm about to tell you everything about the menorah, and then it gives us very little definition of the menorah. Miksha zav, which means it has to be hammered out of gold. The entire thing basically has to be one structure, mikshahi, that again, it's hammered, kamareh, like it was shown to Moshe. So Menachem Mendel Zaks says, well, wait a second. L'chora kashi, he says, I don't understand. The hakas of maschil, it starts off with that I'm about to tell you all about the menorah. And then it tells us one little part of the menorah construction, which is, shemenorah tzricha le'asos miksha, that the menorah has to be hammered. Now, we, of course, know that this is not the only time we're told about the menorah. If it feels like deja vu all over again, that's because it is. We are told about the menorah in Parshas Tetzaveh, and we're told about the menorah in Parshas Pekudei. So, almost like two questions, or 1A and 1B. Question number one is, what is it adding here that wasn't there previously? And question two is, if you're introducing it as v'zeh ma'aseh menorah, which almost leads me to believe that I'm about to tell you everything about the menorah, and then you tell me almost nothing about the menorah. All you tell me is one detail, that it has to be miksha zahav, that has to be hammered out of gold. So Menachem Mendel Zaks says that you learn from here two very beautiful ideas. If you go to the bottom of page number one, where I have the number one, he says, number one, Miksha nikusha umaluchta. Hainu shekol gufei ha'alachos shel amenu. Hein halalu shebein adam lamakom. Hein halalu shebein adam lechaveru. Asher hayarech shehu guf shel menorah. Mishamish lehem semel. It goes through all of the parts of the menorah. Michuyabim lios miksha. It has to be hammered together. Minukashim umalachdim miksha achat. Which means that every part of our Judaism, even if it manifests and represents itself in different ways, ultimately it has to be one harmonious entity. Migufa Torah Kdoshim, Mibli La'asosam Evarim Evarim. We don't have two bifurcated parts of ourselves, or multiple bifurcated parts of ourselves, but rather, we are one. Aileam Lios Miksha Be'osomare. That when you look at me, whether you look at me in the supermarket, whether you look at me in the gym, whether you look at me in the boardroom, whether you look at me in the airport on a TSA line, it doesn't matter. You're going to get the same film Moskowitz, no matter what you see. There's not this, again, bifurcation between who I am. I'm not a schizophrenic person that sometimes I act in a certain way and other times I act another way. I hear this all the time. Someone tell me, Rabbi, when I'm in that boardroom, I'm a shark. I become a different person. I'm like, that's the worst compliment ever. Right? That's a horrible definition of yourself. No, even in the boardroom, again, you could be doing business, but still, you're the same Jew with the same values and the same code of conduct that you are in Shul, that you are outside of Shul. There's no differentiation between who we are and the way we behave, no matter where we are. And so definition number one, says Menachem Mendel Zaks, is miksha achad, that it has to be one harmonious person. Again, we are not multiple people. We do not have multiple personalities depending on where you are. We're the same person and we have to work on that. And it's not so easy, but we work on it. That's number one. But number two, I think is even more beautiful. Because he says, miksha. The word miksha, which Art Scroll translates as hammered out. If you look at the root of the word miksha, what word do you see? Kasha, which means hard. So he says, miksha kishus oref, b'muvanu hatov. He means stubbornness in the best possible way. What does it mean that the Torah, when it describes the menorah, which of course is symbolic of us as the Jewish people, what does it mean that it has to be miksha? What does it mean that we have to, there's a stubbornness to it? So Menachem Mendel Zaks develops the idea that throughout history, the secret sauce to what has kept us going throughout thousands of years of exile is our stubbornness. So the next time your spouse or your neighbor or maybe a parent or a child calls you stubborn, you should say, thank you. I appreciate it. What a compliment, because that is the secret sauce of what's kept the Jewish people together. He says, Koach zeh shel miksha b'ner mitzvah v'torah or sheb menorah Yisrael. Again, the menorah is symbolic of Torah and mitzvos. The notion of the miksha, kishus ha'orah b'mesiras nefesh, mufati l'shmiras adas. It represents the stubbornness that we have in persisting to keep a life of Torah and mitzvos. Ad yirecha is the shlosh averos ha'chamuros, yaharik v'al yavor, the three big ones. Ad pircha is even the small ones. No, I'm okay, thank you. Right? Even the small ones. Right? Amda lanu lahasmid es kiumenu. That is the secret sauce that allows us to survive. Ka'am skula, like a chosen nation. Bechol alfei shnos ra'inu ra'a. Through thousands of years of seeing a lot of hardship and difficulty. Shahainu b'b'chinas kivsa achad bekerav shivim ze'ev teref, or one sheep amongst thousands of wolves. Mishamra alenu shaloli taref mehem velo lavle bekerbam. And yet we were able to survive. And he says, now we understand that when the Pasuk says, Ki am ksheyurovu, when Hashem says you're a stubborn people, that of course was in the negative. But there's a very beautiful positive part of it. And that is the stubbornness of the Jewish people is what's allowed us to persevere. When everyone comes and says, you can't, we're stubborn. And we're saying, no, we can. Think about it, for 2,000 years, everyone said, you're never going to get back to your homeland. God has given up on the Jewish people. There's a new rule of order in the world. God has chosen a new people. And you know what we said? We said, tough, we're sticking with it. We stuck with it. The desire to return to our homeland for 2,000 years, that is the ultimate manifestation of stubbornness. The ultimate manifestation of stubbornness is when Rav Aaron Cutler and so many others came to the shores of this country. And as you learned over Shavuos when we did America 250, America, when at the end of World War II, I won't call it a spiritual wasteland, but it wasn't far behind. Europe was, of course, the bastion of religious life, and America was a fledgling religious community. And yet, there are those who came in the aftermath of the Holocaust. They had every reason to say, we're giving up, we're throwing in the towel. And do you know what they did? They had a lot of stubbornness. And they said, we're not giving up so fast, God. You may have knocked us down and beaten us down, but we're getting back up, and we're going to rebuild Torah to a level that even superseded that which came before World War II. So every part of our existence, both as an individual and as a people, is represented, said Menachem Mendel Zaks, through this idea of miksha. As individuals, it means we have to be consistent. We're consistent with who we are. It's not that there were multiple pieces that were put together to construct the menorah. No, the menorah had to be built out of one solid piece, chiseled away. But it was all the same piece. And that's who we are. No matter where I am and no matter what circumstance I find myself in, I am a Yid. And I could be with the miserable TSA people. I could be with whatever circumstance you find yourself. They're wonderful. But unfortunately, the experience is not always so wonderful, right? Again, you still have to conduct yourself.
Global entry,
yeah, I know. You still have to conduct yourself like a Jew. That's idea number one. But idea number two, I think, is the even more powerful idea. Miksha. From the language of kashet, that you have to be stubborn as a mule, not in the negative sense, but in the positive sense, that when everyone else tells us to quit and to throw in the towel and that God has given up on us, we, the Jewish people, are the paradigm of stubbornness. And it's that stubbornness which has kept us going throughout history. That is idea number one from Rav Menachem Mendel Zaks. Idea number two comes from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, page number three. Now, we know that there's a lot of complaining going on in the Parsha. And in particular, at the end of the Parsha, there's a story of Moshe and Yoshua, and people are wondering who should get Nevuah prophecy, who should not get prophecy. And so there's a lot of both complaining and a lot of, so to speak, like uncertainty about roles, right? You have Miriam, you have Aaron, you have Yoshua, you have Moshe. There's a lot of that going on in the Parsha. Listen to what Reb Chaim Kanievsky writes in his Sefer. He says that there's a pasuk in Tehillim. And the pasuk in Tehillim in Kuvav Tezayin, which is 106:15, says, 16, excuse me, Vaikanu leMoshe b'machane le'aron kadosh Hashem. That's a pasuk in Tehillim, which literally translates to mean that they were envious of Moshe in the camp and of Aaron, Kadosh Hashem, who is so holy to God. Now, that, Reb Chaim Kanievsky points out, is counterintuitive. Generally, when you associate with Moshe, you don't associate Moshe as being a man of the people. Moshe was the one who went up to Har Sinai to receive the Torah. It was Aaron who was the one who was B'toch Ha'am. He was the one who was amongst the people. And so, Reb Chaim Kanievsky points out that they're criticizing them for exactly the thing that they're not. In other words, Vaikanu leMoshe b'machaneh. They complained about Moshe for being in the machaneh. Well, that's not, usually you'd say Moshe was the one who was aloof. Moshe was in the ivory tower. And then Aaron, you'd usually criticize Aaron that he's too much amongst the people. No, they criticize Aaron that he was too holy, he was in the ivory tower. So he says, what is this talking about? Moshe ayah mufrash umuvdav Allah shamayim. Moshe was the one who was in the ivory tower. Tanu alav shesarich leos b'machanes. They complained about him. And they said, you should be in the camp. And Aaron, that was Rodev Shalom ve'Oev Shalom, he was in the camp. They complained about him that he should be Kadosh Hashem. In other words, no matter what you were, they complained that you should have been something else. Reb Chaim Kanievsky gives a mashal. He says, Yeshna melitza v'kaduma sheksuv mekadon. He says, I want to give you an analogy to how to understand this entire dynamic. And it's a little bit, obviously, satirical, but I think it's a very powerful idea. Pamachas halchu av ubeno. There was once a father and son that were walking, and the father was on the donkey, and the son was walking alongside the donkey. Pagash adam echad esav. So someone encountered the father, and he said to him, how could you do that to your son, that you're riding on the donkey, and your son is walking beside you? So what does the father do? Yered me'achamor ve'ala alav esbeno. So the father listens to the feedback from the first guy, gets off the donkey, and puts his son on the donkey. Then they keep walking. Pugshu adam sheni v'amar leben. And now, again, the son's on the donkey, father's walking beside. Now another guy encounters the son, and he says, v'chize kibarav. Is this very respectful to your father, that your father's walking and you're riding on the donkey? So what do? V'alu shneim al chamor. So now they both go on the donkey. Now a third guy meets them. Upugshu adam shlishi v'amar. V'chiech lo tirachim al chamor. Here you have the father and the son, they're riding the donkey, and someone comes up to them and says, do you not have any mercy on the donkey, that both of you are riding on the donkey? So what do? V'yardu shneim. So now both of them get off the donkey. So now you have the father and the son walking beside the donkey, and no one's on the donkey. So now a fourth guy meets them, and he says, shlosha chamurim holchim ve'ein echad rochev al chavero. He says, like, you three fools, all of you are walking, and none of you are riding on one another? Sof tavar, I am shelacho achamor v'sameo al shechmam. So what do? At the end, they lift up the donkey, and they put it on their shoulders. Okay, so it started off as the one. Obviously, the whole story flips on its head. How does Reb Chaim Kanievsky end? He says, zeh hasof, shel mi shemitpael mima she'omrim lo. He said, this is what happens when all you care about is what other people say about you. If you're always judging your life, if you're always manipulating your life, if you're living your life based only on the feedback of other people, you're going to end up like the end of the story, like the father who's carrying the donkey on his shoulders, because he couldn't be on the donkey while his son was walking. His son couldn't be on the donkey when he was walking. They both couldn't be on the donkey because it's not fair to the donkey. And so they end up with the donkey on their shoulder. So says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, not in these words, but we become the donkey. When all you do is you live your life based on the feedback, sometimes and oftentimes unsolicited by other people or by the expectations of other people, then you'll end up like the person carrying the donkey. And that is not a healthy way to live your life. Now let's go back to the pasuk in Tehillim. Now you understand the criticism against the people at that time. Vaikanu leMoshe b'machaneh. Moshe was up in Shamayim and they complained about him. Moshe, you should be in the camp. And Aaron, who was amongst the people, they say, you should be even holier. What it means is, is that, no, Moshe and Aaron have to live lives that are genuine to who they are, that are honest to who they are, and not always living a life because someone else told them to live life a certain way. And I reference this, I think it's a very powerful idea, because I think you see it all the time. We think peer pressure ends when you graduate high school. Spoiler alert, peer pressure does not end when you graduate high school. Peer pressure is very much real and alive, even into adulthood, even into the way we live our lives to this day. Now, social media obviously has magnified that, but a lot of our lives are dependent on other people's expectations of us, other people's unsolicited feedback to us. And what ends up happening is we don't end up living a life that's true to who we are. We're living a life of someone else's expectations or of someone else's feedback instead of living the life that I'm meant to live. And so again, coming back to the story of the donkey, if you're always changing your life because someone else told you you have to be this way or that way, you're going to be like the person who's carrying the donkey instead of riding on the donkey. No, we want to, what's the imagery of riding on a donkey? Right? It means that you are in control. You are controlling your destiny. You are able to chart your course. If you are carrying the donkey, then you're just the person carrying the donkey. You're not going to get very far, and you're not living the best version of your life. There are so many stories about this, right? The Zusha story, you know, Hashem doesn't want you to be him. He wants you to be the best version of yourself, right? There's so many versions of where you can take this. But again, I think it's a very tragic statement of how many people live their life, which is that they're so concerned about what other people constantly think of them that they end up completely shifting course and not living the life that they want to live, but instead living the life that someone else wants them to live. Now you come back to the Parsha and you understand why Rav Chaim Kanievsky writes this in the Parsha. Whether it's about the complaints against Moshe, whether it's about the story at the end of the Parsha with Yoshua and Moshe and the Nevuah, and Yoshua comes to Moshe and he says, wait a second, a lot of people are prophesizing, or whether it was Miriam and Aaron giving their unsolicited feedback about Moshe. A lot of the stories of this Parsha are about what happens when you only listen to other people and you don't stay true to yourself. And that's why you need both a moral compass. You need people who are you trust, who are going to give you that feedback and allow you to stay the course. And so that even when other people are trying to dictate how you should live your life, you have people that are able to redirect you and to keep you on the correct path. Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, Ramchal, in his first or second chapter of the Mesilas Yesharim, writes this explicitly. He writes, us going through life is no different than going through a labyrinth. In the same way, you know, you go to like those cornfields in like upstate New York and they throw you, you pay an extra $5 and you get to walk through the labyrinth, right? So you don't know where you're going. But there's a guy on top who, if he sees the entirety of the labyrinth, he's able to direct you and to tell you exactly which directions to go to in order to get to your end result. That's the risk we run in this world. Is because we don't know what the destination necessarily looks like. We don't really know what Hashem wants from us. And so we're constantly being swayed depending on which way in which way the feedback comes to us. And that's why it's very important to have Rebbeim. It's very important to have a connection to Torah, a connection to Musar learning, things that are going to ground you and help you understand who you are, what are your unique qualities, what does Hashem expect from you that is different from anyone else in the world. And I live a life that's true to myself and genuine to myself, irrespective of everyone else. That is idea number two, Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So idea number one was from Rav Menachem Mendel Zaks about miksha, that we have to be kashe. We have to be stubborn. That is the secret to longevity of the Jewish people. Idea number two, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, is ride the donkey, don't be carrying the donkey. No one's going to like that one. All right, idea number three comes from Rav Yitzchak Me'anshinov in the Imre Kodesh. This I saw in Otzer Panine Chasidus. You have it here on page number 5. Pasuk says, Vayomer Alehem Moshe, Imdu, Veshma'a, Ma Yitzaveh Hashem Lachem. Of course, we know the story of Pesach Sheni, Lama Nigara, the Jewish people come, those who are Tamei during Pesach, and they come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, why is it fair that we were Tamei during Pesach? We want a second chance. And Moshe says, you know what, it's Taka, a good question. I don't really know what the halacha is. So he says, Vayomer Aleihem Moshe, Imdu, you stand here, Veshma Ma Yitzaveh Hashem Lachem. And I'm going to go talk to God, and I'll tell you what God says. Look at Rashi over there, again, where I have that star. Amar lahem, Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, Imdu, you stand, ve'eshma'a ketalmid amuvtach lishmo mipi rabo. Right, the same way, like someone will ask me a question, I'll say, you know, let me get back to you in 5 minutes. I'm going to go ask Rabbi Goldberg. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Right, wait here 5 minutes and said to Rabbi Goldberg, he went to God, I deal with what I have. Right? And then the pasuk says, Ashrei yilud isha, shekach muvtach, blessed is the child of a woman, shekach muvtach, who's so confident, shekolzman sheyerotze hayemidaberi mashchina. Right, what a great privilege that Moshe Rabbeinu, can you imagine anytime you had a question, you could just say, you know, like, hold on, I'll come back to you in 5 minutes. I'm going to go ask God, and I'm going to come back to you with the answer. That would create a lot of clarity in my life, right? I mean, life a lot easier to live, okay? So to have that access is unbelievable. Ask the Imre Kodesh the following question. He says, I don't understand. Moshe Rabbeinu is anav mikol adam. Right, we learned that in this week's Parsha as well. Ve'ish Moshe, anav mikol adam asher al pnei adama. Moshe Rabbeinu is the humblest of all men. V'im Keni says, Eichamar imdu ve'ashma she'batach she'akash baruch hu yidaber elav. How could someone so humble also be so confident that God is going to talk to him? If anything, that is like the ultimate sign of arrogance. Like, I am so confident that God cares about my conversation with him and that he's going to answer me. Wait here. I'm going to go check with him. It's almost like a flex. Or as they say, T4. It's a flu. If you don't get that, ask your child or grandchild, right? It's a flex. Right? I'm so confident I'm going to go talk to God. Moshe Rabbeinu is flexing. Moshe Rabbeinu is T4? Like, I understand. So that's the question. So he says, I think a very important chiluk. He quotes the Gemara in Sota that says, Isha tovas benar v'hu eino matzilo. Let's say you're walking by a river. You're walking around Captiva Lake. And you see, chas v'shalom, a woman who's drowning in the lake. V'hu eino matzila. But because of tznius, and because of shomer negia, and because, you know, of what people are going to think of me, so I don't save her. Because I'm such a firm person, says the Gemara, harizeh chassid shote. You're a chassid shote, which is a nice way of saying you're an idiot. Right? You're a fool. Because you're trying to be so firm, but your firm kite is causing you to do stupid things. Okay? So don't think that you're so firm by not saving the woman. You're a chassid shote. You're a fool. Why? Shetzarech levatir amidosa, because you're supposed to be mevatir, and give up on certain of your principles, kedei lahatzil chavero. Like it's pasha to anyone with half a brain, that if you see someone drowning, so you're supposed to go and save the person. And even if it means for a minute, you got to do things that you otherwise wouldn't normally do. Like anyone with a brain understands that that's what you're supposed to do. V'kan ra Moshe. Now let's come back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Kan ra Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom, liba manishbar shel Yisrael ba'amram la manigra. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the authentic brokenheartedness of those Jews who came and said, why are we left out? Why is it that everyone else got to participate in this mitzvah and we don't get to participate in the mitzvah? Moshe felt bad for them. Moshe understood their pain. He empathized with them. So hiniach Moshe Rabbeinu alav shalom es midaso bishvil Yisrael. Moshe placed his humility off to the side and he said, if there's a Jew in pain, it's not about me and it's not about my perceived limitations because of my humility, but rather I have to rise to the occasion. And therefore, it's okay to be humble in your own personal relationship with Hashem. But when other Jews are depending on you, then humility is not a virtue. Humility is a massive liability. And so therefore, Hiniach Moshe Rabbeinu, Es Midaso, Bishvil Yisrael, he placed his humility off to the side and said, Imdu Vashma. He says, I'm going to go and I'm gonna speak to God on your behalf. And then he has a Yiddish there, which someone will translate for me afterwards, but in the bracket it writes, Kashir nogea davar odos asiya tova la'achir, nitzrach lit maser lakach legamre. It's okay to be humble. It's okay to not think a lot of yourself. It's okay to assume that maybe God doesn't going to answer you or want a relationship with you, whatever the case might be. You could have all that going on in your head. But the moment someone else needs you, the moment the Jewish people need you, the moment a neighbor needs you, then you can't afford that level of false humility. You can't afford to say to yourself, who am I? I'm not worthy. No. B'makom she'ein anashim yishtad alel ishish. You have to step forward and you have to be that guy. And so therefore the humility has to be checked at the door. If you believe that you have a gift or a quality or an ability, something that God gave you that can help another Jew, and you don't do it, because, oh, who am I? I'm going to sit in the corner. I'm not really that good. I'm not really that worthy. Then you are squandering an opportunity. Moshe Rabbeinu was a humble person, but he also understood that humility means that when another Jew needs you, you have to step forward. You can't afford to be humble anymore. You can't afford to say, who am I? Right? We have this all. I could give 10 different examples. I'll give one because I know Farley's here. He's going to like this example, right? Let's say, right, again, we're all upset at the New York Times, right? The slanderous blood libel of Nicholas Kristof Yimach Shmo, right? The slanderous blood libel. So a lot of people say to themselves, like, who am I? The New York Times is going to listen to me if I write a letter. Who am I to write an op-ed? I'm just a little Jew living in Florida, right? No, the answer is the world can no longer tolerate that level of humility. You can be humble, but also say, you know what, if I have an ability to write, and if I have ability to communicate, I have to say something, and I have to make my voice heard, and I have to protest outside the New York Times because they never walk back that story, even though it was horrifically sourced. That is, I think, the idea that Rav Yitzchak Me'amshinov is talking about here. You cannot afford to waste the opportunity, miss the opportunity to help another Jew. And Moshe Rabbeinu understood that. Moshe Rabbeinu understood that it's not a contradiction to both be humble, but also to realize that when another Jew needs you, you have to be willing to step forward and to step into that role and to step up. Because if you don't do it, then you're a chassid shote. What does your humility get you? Humility is important vis-a-vis your relationship with Hashem. When I come to Hashem, I'm supposed to think I am nothing, I'm gornish, I'm mevatel myself 100% to Hashem. But it would also be stupid for me not to think that at the end of the day, Hashem gave every single one of us around this table abilities. Hashem gave every single one of us talents. Hashem put every single one of us in this world. And part of our responsibility in this world is to lessen the pain of other people. It's to advocate on behalf of other people. Some people could do that through charity. Some people could do that through advocacy. Some people could do that through Shabbos invites. You know, whatever the case might be, whatever your unique circumstance is, every single one of us has that ability. And if we squander that opportunity, it's not humility. It's not humility. You're a chassid shote. You think it's couched as religiousness in I'm so holy, but really, you're missing the point altogether. This is not easy for people. Rabbi Goldberg and I talk about it all the time. You know, we have rabbinic colleagues, and it took me a long time to get comfortable enough to record my shiurim and to put them online. Type A, perfectionist, whatever. We can diagnose that later, right? But I was always like, who am I? There are a million stuff out there. Like, what am I putting my stuff? And Rabbi Goldberg made the great point. He's like, well, what gives you the right to, like, get up on Shabbos morning and give a drasha? Right? Like, okay, so if you're nobody, like, why do you think you have something valuable to say? So the answer is maybe I don't, and you guys can discuss that after this year, right? No, but the answer is that if you believe that Hashem gave you a gift and an ability, so you have to use it. I happen, Baruch Hashem, to be able to give speeches. That's about all I can do, right? Other people are great writers. Other people have enormous empathy and are able to open up their homes and make everyone feel welcome. Other people are able to run a minion and give everyone a hug and create a community around that. Every single person has that ability. And if we don't do that, again, that's his point. It's not that you're so humble. It's that you're a fool because you're taking the gifts that God gave you and you're taking the opportunities that Hashem put you in and you're missing those opportunities, not because you're so religious, but because you're a chassid shote. And that's what the Amshinavar says. Now we understand back the pasuk. The pasuk says, Vayomer le Moshe imdu v'ashma. Moshe says, I got access. It wasn't a flex. Moshe Rabbeinu understood that there were Jews in pain, that there were brokenhearted Jews that said, we cannot participate in the mitzvah and it's driving us crazy. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, if I can make a Jew feel better, if I can lessen the pain of another Jew, then I can't afford humility right now. Then I have to be willing to step forward and to step up and to step into action. And it's that chutzpah to kedusha. Right? We started with being stubborn. Now I'm going to talk about chutzpah. It's that chutzpah to kedusha, that azus to kedusha that they talk about, which means that there's a healthy level of chutzpah that a Jew needs. Sometimes it's to give a drasha. Sometimes it's to rally. Sometimes it's to write an op-ed. Sometimes it's to tell off the UN, right? We Jews understand that there's this azus to kedusha. There's a very healthy chutzpah that we need to have that says, yes, I'm humble, but also right now the world needs me to step into this role. And so we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one came from Rabbi Nachman Mendel Zaks, Miksha Zahav. We have to be kasher. We have to be stubborn. not stubborn in our homes, with our children, with our wives, but stubborn when it comes to our Judaism. We have to be relentless and persistent and not let ourselves get knocked down, but be willing to get right back up. That's the stubbornness of the Jewish people. That's the secret sauce of our history throughout the generations. Idea number two came from Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Be the one riding the donkey in control of your own destiny. Don't let other people tell you how to live your life. And idea number three is from the Rav Yitzchak Mianshin of the Imre Kodesh about what humility is and what humility is not. And with that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.